At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah. Baseless Combat 7-5.
Log Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine. I believe that we had our intro music fixed, and apparently we did not. So maybe next week we can get that going. Welcome, Catherine. Welcome, Tim.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I am in transit from the Atlanta airport. I actually had to pick up one of our guests for later tonight, Scott Aikman, who just came back from Washington, D.C., and the 21st Century Dems training, and we'll have him on a little later, and I'll talk about the training that I attended in Atlanta and some things I learned, along with we're having Eric Underwood come on, a state Senate candidate that is very familiar with all political stripes, Democrat, Republican, and Independent, just the last 3 years. So he'll come on as our first guest. Well, Tim, of course, tell us when he calls in, but there was supposed to be a big U.S. Senate debate that was supposed to be on Georgia Public Television's website. When I left, I could not get it uploaded to see. Could either of you?
I could not, but I just saw a little brief thing that one of the candidates was late, and that maybe that's what happened. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd heard of that one candidate dropped out at 3, or no, I'm sorry, dropped out yesterday, last night, and said they weren't coming. Then they decided, just before it started, they were coming back again, and they started about 20 minutes late, which, bit of a problem, and that caused, I guess, some of it. But then it didn't appear that Georgia Public Television on their website had promoted it a lot, because you went to the front of their site. There was no place that was like, oh, at 3:20 I can go here, or 3 o'clock I can go here. So I guess it's just the debate that happened that we're not going to hear much about unless one of the newspapers like the AJC, who apparently has a new political reporter just covering the U.S. Senate race, unless they write a big story on it, we won't hear a lot out of it. Tim, what have you heard?
Haven't heard very much. I know it was supposed to be, like you were talking about, streamed, and then Tandy's Tavern was supposed to do something live with it. None of that happened. So we're kind of in the dark about what even occurred.
Yes, because it would have been interesting. It was the first one, I think, that you would have all the candidates at, which would have made it noteworthy. And I'm sure there'll be more. I know that the true GPTV debate that will actually show on their network, I believe, is scheduled for the 12th, just right before primary day, July 12th. So,
Let me interrupt and ask this question. What is the inside scoop on a candidate who was not going to come and at the very last second decided they would come? I mean, what was that even about?
Well, I was told that, it was Robin Jones, that DeKalb County CEO, that decided he was not going to attend and then decided to attend. I don't know why there'd be such consternation about just come into something that seems like an obvious thing for a candidate to do. It was a very formish event where candidates were asked questions across the board and they all answered. There was no cross questioning where one candidate could pick out a difference with another candidate. So it was a very safe environment, I should say. That I did hear that detail about how the format went. So it seems like it would be one that you feel good about going to.
Yeah, I was going to say, why would any candidate even not want to go to that to start with?
Well, yeah, as a voter, you have to wonder about a candidate that would not want to. I mean, if in the end he did not go to it, since he did go to it, I guess, then it changes the dynamics a little bit. And more may be said about it amongst people that were there, not people hearing about it, 100 miles away like I am, or 75 miles away like I am on the telephone.
Well, there is a little, there's a note on Tondi's. Apparently, the person who was supposed to live blog it, when he got there, he discovered that the Wi-Fi doesn't work in the room, so.
And I figured it was a technical issue. I mean, and those come up. I mean, you know, I guess the places that Wi-Fi is around, it's just like the air, but then there's some places that just don't have the setup yet. And so you're going to see that some places and some places not.
And what was this venue?
I know the host was the League of Women Voters, the Georgia League of Women Voters. I don't know the location. Do you know, Catherine?
I'm looking now. No, I don't see where it was.
Okay, and at this time, I believe we're welcoming Mr. Eric Underwood. Are you with us, Mr. Underwood?
Yes, sir, I am. Thanks
for having me. Well, welcome to the Kudzu Vine. This is Tim Shiflett, and what we'd like to do with our guest, we'd like for you to start out by telling us a little bit about yourself and your biography.
Sure. I grew up in Atlanta. I'm a twin. My mother had six children and two sets of twins, and I'm the oldest out of my mother's children. And we grew up, like I said, in the Atlanta area. I grew up in the Mechanicsville section of Atlanta in a project. My mother was a single mother, and, you know, my father and my sister's father was never there in the picture. So my mother struggled, and she always instilled education. And I went to finish high school at Southside High School in the Grant Park area of Atlanta. And then soon thereafter, I went to college, to Central State University, and majored in political science and focused on international relations. And go ahead.
Tell us why you are seeking state's Senate seat number 36 and what you think the main issues are.
Sure. I'm seeking Senate 36 because I believe that I work better on a bipartisan effort, you know, than my opponent has. I'm no stranger to politics. This is my third go-round in the political world. And I drafted the Georgia Sexual Prayer Bill, House Bill 1.
Uh-oh.
Are you with us, sir?
I think we lost him.
It would appear that we have lost him. Are you with us, Mr. Underwood?
Well, hopefully he'll call back and we'll pick right back up. I know I'm traveling between Cartersville and Rome and looked at my phone first thinking it was me, but I got
no,
all the bars.
It was definitely him because he has hung up, and hopefully Mr. Underwood, if you can hear us, you will call back.
Kim, it's you with those tough questions. I guess when you can't, you just grill people too hard.
Yeah, really. Oh, I hadn't even got to the tough questions yet, and he was gone. But hopefully, he'll be right back with us.
I'm sure it's a technical issue, not a emotional anger one at our interview. And
no, because if he was angry at what I had asked so far, you know.
Well, yeah, who are you, and why you're running? Those are pretty much ones you could ask of anybody across the political spectrum. Kim, let us know when he calls back in, but I want to make sure that we talk about these conferences. And Scott Aikman's with me, and he went to the 21st Century Democrats Conference. And Scott, you know, is one of our oldest and longest guests, if you will, because he was on the very first show with us. But Scott attended that as a trainer and then helped facilitate some other things. But he can tell us a little about the conference. I'm going to hand the phone to
Let me interrupt you, David. I believe we've got Mr. Underwood back.
Okay, well, let's finish that interview first.
Mr. Underwood, are you with us now?
Yes, I'm here. I guess the call dropped. Sorry about that.
That's quite all right. The next question I'd like to ask is, when you switched parties earlier this year, you said that you had not been treated well by the Republican Party and that they were long on promises and short on results. What specifically did that refer to, sir?
Well, that was a private conversation that was made public. But what I was saying is, in essence of that, the party was not trying to outwardly reach to minorities and some of the things that I cared about. And I've been a registered Republican ever since 18 years old, and it seemed like I was just, you know, going against the grain quite a bit on a lot of the issues that I cared about. And I just, you know, wanted to work with, you know, a group of people who are inclusive and who are much more diverse and who are, you know, accepting of the fact that, you know, it takes a village, you know, to get things done. And I wasn't getting that reception on the Republican end, albeit, you know, I was very successful in the party, but it was just time to make a change, you know, for the right reasons. And I felt that I just had to make that move.
I understand. I don't want to hog up all the question time here. We also have Catherine Smith and David McLaughlin on with us. Catherine, do you have any questions?
Yes, Eric. I'm just wondering what's happening in the district. Are you getting a good response from the citizens that you're? Are you walking the streets, or I mean, are you knocking on doors, and what's the response?
Oh, sure. The response has actually been very great. A lot of people know me already, so that's a good thing. And they know that, I mean, I am a conservative, but they know that I'm going to work for them. And I have an open door policy. So I've been knocking on doors. I've been going around to, you know, in-home meetings with groups of people around the district. And, you know, I'm getting a very good reception, you know. And
what are the issues that people feel like they're not getting, that aren't being worked on in the district by the current state senator?
Sure. People that I've talked to are concerned, are we going to have another fiasco last year about Peach Care? And I definitely want to make sure that Peach Care is protected for those that are qualified to be on it. And also, people want to know, are property taxes going to go up because of the shortfalls of many governments around, you know, Georgia? And I believe this is a time to either freeze taxes or cut them, you know, to offset, you know, some of the worries, you know, of our many citizens around Georgia. And I believe, you know, through cutting taxes, or freezing taxes, that will promote growth within our state and to be one less burden on our citizens who got to choose between gas or groceries.
And the people in the district are unsatisfied with their current leadership in those two areas?
I've been hearing quite a bit that, you know, they're ready for a change. And, you know, Nan has been around for 20-plus years in the House, and this is their first term in the Senate. And they're feeling that, you know, this is a change season, and I've changed parties, and, you know, and I'm feeling the change as well. And I just work better, you know, with black, white, Republican, Democrat, independent. That's been my whole life, you know, and I've worked well with many groups, and I'm not a partisan person. You know, I see a problem, let's work all together to try to find a solution and fix it.
Well, you know, I don't disagree with that, but that doesn't really work very well in Georgia, does it?
Well, I'm very known in the House and the Senate. I have many friends that are senators. Actually, I have many friends, both Democrat and Republican, that are supporting me in this race, which I'm very pleased about. And, you know, I'm that type of person that can roll up his sleeves and bring people at the table together and to say, look, we're all Georgians, and this all affects us, so let's find a solution, and, you know, let's get down to the solution here.
David, do you have any questions?
Yes. Mr. Underwood, for coming on. I remember in your 2006 campaign, you ran an independent campaign against Mabel Thomas, and
And Mabel, again, in that campaign, you ran some internet commercials, one in which you threw her picture in the garbage can. My first question is, what compelled you to do that?
Well, that was I see, misunderstood by some folks out there. I was representing because a lot of people were tired of the partisan politics, and there's lots of folks up there on both sides of the aisle that are just very partisan, that they don't want to work with anybody to get the job done. And I was just merely representing, you know, let's just take out the trash in terms of, you know, we're tired of this partisan politics. Let's start fresh. Let's start new. Let's throw away the old way of politics and begin a new one.
So, but that's almost symbolically, you're calling Mabel Thomas trash, your opponent. Isn't that kind of the same kind of politics we don't want?
No, that I would never disrespect anyone like that, and certainly a woman. My mother was a single mother who raised 6 children and 2 sets of twins by herself in a housing project in Atlanta, and I have nothing but the utmost respect for women or any opponent of mine in any particular race. So I was not conveying that at all. So I'm sorry that people took it that the wrong way, but that wasn't how I was trying to convey that in the campaign.
Well, could you on our show, for our listeners and the voters, pledge that you're not going to use those kind of tactics against either Senator Orrock or your other opponent, Andre Gerry?
Sure. I will pledge right now and right here that I'm a man of my word and I'm a man of class. And I'm a Southern gentleman. And it's going to be about the issues. And I think that's what people care about. People are tired of negativity. And, you know, I'm about solutions and solving problems. Unfortunately, you know, Nan and Andre Gerry seem to want to focus on negative things about me. And I've just been above board on that. You know, there's a Atlanta City investigation going on with Andre Gerry in terms of trying to illegally get information on me in this campaign, and he's under investigation right now for that, for contacting people representing that he is an official part of the city of Atlanta when he is not. So, you know, that investigation is going on. There's an investigation going on with the Secretary of State's office with Mr. Gerry and some of his supporters claiming to be, you know, Secretary of State employees. So the Inspector General is also investigating that as well. So I've been above board this, and I'm going to let the investigations, you know, run their course, and I'm going to campaign hard for the people of Georgia and District 36.
Yes. Now, in your congressional campaign, you based your campaign out of Augusta. Now, at that time, did you reside in Augusta or did you reside in Atlanta? And either way, doesn't that cause a little bit of problem of representing the people?
No. In fact, Georgia law, as it's written now in congressional elections, you do not have to be a resident of that district to run. In fact, you know, Johnny Eisen and others in the past have done the same thing that I've done, run in other districts that they weren't, you know, particularly a resident of. And I just pretty much had a campaign office down here, and I felt a real need and call to run for that seat because I believe that there's need to be a change and there's need to be a new leadership. And it was just the same old type of politics as usual on the types of persons that were running. And I thought that I could do a real good job for Georgia and for this country as well, because I just love Georgia and I love our country, and I wanted to serve, you know, my state and my country, and I thought that was the best way to do it.
But don't you agree that, I mean, it's not like you ran next door and, like, you were lived in the 5th and you ran in the 4th. I mean, to Augusta or to Athens, that's quite a drive.
Well, I would say that I'm a Georgian, and I know what Georgians care about, and, you know, I'm all, there's, as I am the same person as you're talking to today, you know, there are many people who share the same views that in Augusta, Athens, and elsewhere around Georgia. I'm a Georgian, so that qualifies me to run on issues that Georgians care about and what I care about. So that's what qualified me to run. And as well, I had experience. You know, I worked for a United States Senator, you know, and I worked for, you know, the City Solicitor's Office. I worked for, you know, David Ralston on getting this very important bill passed that I drafted. So, you know, I'm very experienced when it comes to knowing how the function of government works and knowing how to cross party lines on getting important matters done. And I thought I'd be able to do that in the United States House of Congress, but, you know, I wasn't successful in that race, and, you know, Paul Brown won, and you know, he seems to be doing a fairly decent job as a congressman in the 10th CD.
Would you say that he's doing a better job as a congressman for that district than Nan Ulrich is doing for a state senator in her district?
Let me tell you something. I'm friends with Paul, and I'm also somewhat friendly with Nan, even though we disagree on some things. Nan has done an outstanding job in her lifetime for civil rights and for women. She's just an amazing person. And so that's an unfair question to say, because Paul just got there and Nan's been, you know, been in her seat for quite some time, you know, on the House and the Senate side. But, you know, it's nothing personal against Nan. It's just that I believe that I can do a better job in terms of uniting both Democrats and Republicans in the House. I mean, I got so many senators, state senators, and on both sides of the aisle, both Democrat and Republican, in the House and the Senate, supporting me in this race. And when the report comes out at the end of this month, you'll see all the senators and all the House members on both sides of the aisle supporting me in this race.
So could you go ahead and tell us some of these Democratic state senators and state House members that have endorsed you over Senator Ulrich?
I can tell you, you can wait and see the report that comes out on June 30th. What I can tell you is this. Some that came out is former Senator Jim Whitehead.
But he's not a Democrat. I mean,
no,
this
he's
is a Democratic primary.
No, he's not. But he also supports Democrats, ones that he knows that aren't partisan. And he's supporting some other Democrats in this election as well. So Jim is a man of principle. And if you have views that are similar to his, he's going to support you. And Jim's a friend of mine, and he's supportive. And you just have to see. There's some that I'm working on right now that are, you know, crossing over. You know, Greg Heck is one of them. Former Senator Greg Heck, he's supporting me. And there's some others that you're going to be finding out that are going to be loud and clear that they support me in this election and it's time for change.
Okay, well, I'm going to pass it back over to Tim to kind of conclude us out.
Yes, sir. I wanted to ask you this question before we get to our closing segment of this interview. You do have strong ties to the 10th Congressional District, and there are several candidates in that congressional race over there this year. If one of them is seeking your endorsement in that race, will you be endorsing anyone over there?
I have been asked, and yes, I'm very known within that 10th Congressional District because it's 21 counties, and I campaigned hard in every single one of them. And then, in fact, a lot of the candidates who are in those races now are saying that my name keeps coming up in those discussions, in those meetings. But I will, I'm not going to make a decision at this time, but I will be.
Okay. Now, before you leave us, we were wondering if someone listening tonight would like to help you in your race, could you please tell us how they could help and how they can contact your campaign?
Sure. My email is Eric Underwood, that's Eric Underwood at AOL.com. You can send me an email If you want to get involved and volunteer, we're out in full force, and I need additional help with a lot of things. And also, my website is still under construction, but it's up. It's at it's Eric Underwood. I'm sorry, it's underwoodforsenate36.com. So, again, that's underwoodforsenate36.com.
All right, Mr. Underwood, we thank you for being on with us tonight. We hope to talk to you again in the future as the race progresses, and we'll be talking to you again.
Well, thank you for having me on. I look forward to the next conversation.
All right. Good night, sir.
Bye-bye.
Yes. Well, right before he called back in, I had pretty much introduced Scott. I'm going to go ahead and hand the phone right over to Scott to talk about the 21st Century Dems training. Tim and Catherine, ask questions all you want. I'll be, the phone will be in Scott's hands, not mine.
Okay. good evening there, Tim and Catherine. How y'all doing?
Hey, right, Scotty.
Good to hear from you.
Good to hear you guys, and tell you what, it's good to be back in Georgia. 100 degrees in Washington in June, that's obscene.
Dang.
Hadn't been too good here in Rome either, Scotty, like 96 today, so.
Wow.
Get ready.
Yeah, it's hot in Atlanta, too.
Well, I tell you what, it was hot in Washington, and maybe some of the temperature went up because of the hard work that the Democrats were doing there in D.C. over the last 4 days. It was a wonderful event to attend, and I was lucky enough to be a speaker at one of the 15 trainers they had, but I didn't walk away without learning something myself, so I feel like I got to go there for free, so to speak. I left with more than I deserved to. But just wanted to share with you, I don't know how many of our listeners are familiar with the 21st Century Democrats and the organization. It is an organization that promotes progressive populist democratic ideas. And, you know, some of the folks that benefited from the organization in the past and values and candidates we've supported, folks like Tom Harkin, Al Gore, Paul Wellstone. But this particular conference was about campaign management, and it included everything from organizing a field plan to the get out the vote, mail campaigns, voter registration, internet campaigning. We actually did some canvassing, not just talked about planning it, but taking it to the field. These 80-plus folks that participated in the event went out yesterday in that 100-degree weather and canvassed Arlington, Virginia for Mark Warner Senate campaign. And I think they learned a lot when the rubber met the road, so to speak. And if you have any questions, I've got some more stuff to share, but I thought I'd see if you had any questions about the event.
Well, I think that's great that they actually put people out on the street, because I think that making that first step out into canvassing is always the hardest one. And if you're doing it with a group of people that are also in training, I think that's a wonderful strategy. Because I know the first time I did it, it was really hard, but after I did it, I loved it and do it more often because of that.
Absolutely. And I didn't have to go out yesterday. I was fortunate, but I was one of the van drivers. We had three vans running folks back and forth, and I was trying to tell the folks, I was trying to motivate them. I told them, I said, if you can go out and campaign here in a district that's not yours for a candidate that you might not be that familiar with, it'll be so much easier when you get back home to where you live in your districts and campaigning for the folks that you know. And they, as a group, had a very, very positive experience, and I just think it's wonderful. And, of course, the great thing for them is they made their mistake somewhere where it's not going to hurt them and their candidates that they're going to work hard for. And it was a wonderful group of folks, a real cross-section of the United States. We have folks as far away as Los Angeles and Oakland, California, to Connecticut, some Georgia folks, North Carolina, South Carolina, Maryland, Chicago, Illinois, Michigan, Iowa, and you know, folks as young as 19, and I think our oldest participant was 77.
Wow.
Wow.
it was wonderful. It was very energizing. And go ahead.
I was going to ask this, Scott. Did the presidential campaign have representatives at this conference?
No, they did not. Actually, some of our staff members left yesterday to attend Hillary Clinton's speech there in Washington. We had our conference at Georgetown University's campus, and it's a beautiful campus. But they did come back. The staffers that had left us had actually worked on Clinton's campaign earlier in the year. They came back and literally were so energized and said, you know, things along the lines of best speech she ever gave. And, you know, if she had given that speech earlier in the year or if she had spoke that way throughout the campaign, it might have had a different result. But, you know, her message of unity, you know, there were folks there that had been Clinton supporters and folks there that were Obama supporters, and there were a few Edwards folks around. But, you know, at the end of the day, when everybody went home this afternoon, it was one party focused on one goal, and that's taking back the White House.
Most of the people that were there, were these state party people? Were they local volunteers? Was it a mixture?
It was a mixture. It was a true cross-section. I mean, I was there as a trainer, but there were folks there like myself, you know, local, you know, party leaders. There were folks, there was one lady there from North Carolina. She'd actually been a campaign manager for a lieutenant governor's race, and she's also doing that this election cycle. Folks from local offices, for, ranging from county tax commissioner to an office I'd never heard of before in Michigan, a county drain commissioner in charge of water and sewer.
What?
Drain commissioner.
I know about that.
And, you know, everything from statewide races really down to, you know, something as local as a drain commissioner's race. But a wonderful group of folks. And I tell you what, someone as young as 20 years old who was born in Canada, immigrated to the United States when he was 12 years old. He already has a bachelor's degree. You know, he's working in a banking company there in Michigan. He's running for local office, and he's volunteering for another campaign. You know, if our next generation of young people are this dedicated and in this much of an activist group, you know, our future is really bright.
I'm really glad to hear that there's, you know, we often talk on the Kudzu Vine and, of course, everywhere when we're talking about is Democratic politics is the importance of building a bench, and it sounds like the 21st Century Democrats is working on that, and that's really good news.
Absolutely.
And Scott, if a person attended that conference who wanted to bring something back and apply it at the local level where it would make a difference, what do you think the main thing was that they got out of that conference?
I'll tell you from what I got from it, and everybody's different, but watching folks, you know, not just deal with the internet in terms of, you know, we use some vote builder items to select what areas to canvas, but to watch that all take place within, say, a 24-hour period and see the results and watch them post those results and get the positive, you know, feelings and share that with one another, that's what I took from it. Was there's no election today. There was no election yesterday. But just the enthusiasm, and it was contagious. And I know those folks are going to take that back home with them, and hopefully they can spread it to either their state campaigns or their local campaigns. I'll be honest with you, I'm so excited about the next time we meet as a party here in Floyd County, just so I can share my experiences with our folks.
Wow. Sounds wonderful.
It really was. Very energizing. And I'd like to share with the listeners, if anybody out there would like to, you know, get out on the web or maybe even call 21st Century Democrats, some of that information, if it's okay.
Sure.
Their web address is www.21st.dems, you know, 21stdems.org, and their phone number is 202-626-5620. And, you know, if you're a candidate and you're listening, you know, they're looking to endorse candidates and help, you know, again, progressive populist Democratic candidates, and they have a very successful track record of getting folks elected.
Great.
I'm going to hand the phone back to Dave then.
All right, Scott. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, and thank you, Scott, for coming on and sharing that information. And then, Catherine, I know you were scheduled to attend, but couldn't make it, I don't believe, to the training in Atlanta midweek.
It got, you know, I'm a small business owner.
Yes.
And it often takes my, I love it. I love my job. I love our business. And on Wednesday it got crazy, and, you know, I always welcome that. It's always good for business, but I just could not get away. And I tried to get my ticket to someone, but I couldn't find anyone who could go either. I'm so sorry I missed it. I hope you can tell us all about it.
Yes, well, there's a lot of technical stuff that I, you know, enjoyed, you know, knowing that I do a lot of web politics as part of electu.com. So Gilbert Navalia and I both went, and we learned a lot of technical stuff, but I don't want to bore people with, you know, getting short codes and, you know, texting details and stuff like that. But the good news is one thing, I made a lot of connections for the kudzu vine for folks that have other things besides just technical knowledge, that they were all, like, if a lot of people had heard of the show or if I just explained what the show was, they're like, oh, wow, that's, you know, one of the next things, and they're going to be willing to come on the show, and hopefully we'll kind of sprinkle those people in between now and the fall. But then the other thing is the lunch speaker was Matt Towery, and he gave a lot of polling information. And it wasn't so much the, like, this number, you know, this person has this number on this date and this person has that number. It was a lot of the techniques and what to look for in polls, and that I thought was real valuable. He talked about automated polls where, you know, a robot just calls up. He said used to those things were not accurate at all, but now they're kind of more accurate because people are more, those are going to be short surveys and they answer them. And another thing that he made a good point, it's a sad point, but a good point, is if people have biases against race or gender, when they talk to a live person, they may have this sense of guilt that they don't want to tell the person how they're really going to vote in the secret ballot booth. So they'll say they might lean towards a black candidate, lean towards a female candidate, but then really not do that on election day, and that skews the polls, and we've seen that in past races. I think Tom Bradley's race in California back in 82 was one of the first signs of that. But he said when somebody's talking at a computer, they don't have that guilt factor, and he feels that's one of the reasons that his firm, Insider Advantage, was able to accurately poll Texas, and they were one of the few to do it, was because the people pushed the buttons the way they voted, unlike talking to a live human. There's other things he talked about, like you need to read exactly what's on the ballot, not add people's past titles, because on the ballot it doesn't say if somebody used to be a lieutenant governor or they, you know, did XYZ job. It just says their name and their party, and so it's important. And it's also important to read the names out in order, not rotate names or anything like that. And I thought that was all interesting information, that when I see polls and I get a chance to see the questions or cross tabs, those kind of things, I can look for those.
Mm-hmm.
David.
So that was, yes.
David, about Matt Towery, you know, recently he put out a poll that showed that Bob Barr would have a pretty large effect on the presidential race in this state as a Libertarian candidate. Did he happen to mention that?
He mentioned it in passing that that'll affect the state. He didn't go into where he thinks that'll be, if that'll end up growing to 10 or shrinking to 5. He didn't get into that. But he did mention, or he or someone else mentioned that that Bob Barr is actually polling as high as 6% in North Carolina.
Right.
And this is a state that he's not even known in.
I mean,
you know, so it could be that the Barr effect, you know, it may be that there's some disgruntled Republicans that just want a choice besides McCain, and then he siphons off a point or two in a lot of states, and that could then affect closer states. But he did mention one specific number that I want to share with everybody. He said that right now, the unaided, that means just Saxby Chambliss, not incumbent U.S. Senator or anything like that, just Saxby Chambliss, his name ID is under 50%. I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting to know that it's right there. So that he's really, I mean, of course, he has the war chest to raise his name ID, but he'll definitely have to spend it more than you think just to even get name ID up in his election.
Well, that's good news.
Yes. I mean, it was real interesting. He says being on TV does matter, and he says he said, talking about when he's on, I believe he's on WSB as their one of their political commentators, he'll go off for a while and then come back, and he'll know, like, people will be recognizing him, and then he'll be off for a while and they won't recognize him. And that seemed to speak to why Del Cardwell's name ID is so high compared to the amount of money he may have in his bank account, is because of all that, I guess it's hard to call it earned media. I guess he earned his income, though. But you know what I mean? It's that being on TV all that time would raise his name ID up, particularly with seniors who are constant voters and better news watchers, if you will.
And how does he see the Democratic side of that U.S. Senate race playing out? Did he say that?
He didn't get in a ton of details other than Chambliss. His name ID is not very high. I mean, the bank account's obviously huge. But if you think about, like, what we were talking about with North Carolina, although Dole's lead did increase a little bit again, Georgia could be much more in play than it seems to be right now once we get a nominee and things coalesce, if people actually believe, if you will.
Yeah, that makes sense. I heard this morning, I believe it was on the Georgia Gang, they said that there are 600,000 eligible African-Americans who have not yet registered to vote. Could you imagine if just a large portion of those people registered, what could happen statewide?
Oh, certainly. I mean, African-American voters, younger voters, and sadly to say, I mean, there may be that people want to they're afraid to support Obama for whatever, you know, closed-minded reasons. They still may not completely live with the Democratic Party, and then will, you know, races underneath would be would grow some, the support there.
Yeah. Speaking of which, David, you're on the road and probably haven't had a chance to see this. Catherine and I have been talking about it right before you came on today.
Yes.
It is rumored that Obama will be in Georgia later this month, and that perhaps he might be bringing his bag of endorsements with him. Catherine, have you heard anything along those lines?
I just read about it in the AJC Political Insider today. I was fortunate enough to see and talk with Congressman Lewis yesterday at a private fundraiser in Atlanta, and he is taking this very seriously. He is not, he is running a campaign. He said that he had been out canvassing yesterday morning early and was putting signs up in people's yards and went to the Inman Park, I think it was the Inman Park Festival yesterday. He's taking this very seriously, but he wants to win, and he wants to win big. So I think a visit from Senator Obama would be wonderful. And, of course, I have so much respect for Congressman Lewis, and I think it would be a really profound statement for him to win, have a resounding win, and at the same time for us to elect the first African-American president. I think it would be a really incredible experience for him. I think he's really looking forward to that.
And David, the reason that she brought up John Lewis was his name was one of the names that was mentioned that Obama might actually be endorsing when he comes. And the other one was an interesting name, John Barra. Now, did he not endorse Obama back in maybe February or something like that?
He did endorse him. He held that voter registration drive coordinated with the Obama campaign. And obviously that would be a big help. A part of me is like, I wish he would maybe lend some support to candidates that really, really could use it. Because, I just don't see how anybody thinks about not, you know, reelecting John Lewis. I mean,
I
the other two candidates, I'm just not big fans.
Well, you know, he said yesterday in his comments that that his colleagues in Washington don't believe that he really has an opposition. He said they think I'm crazy, that there are people running against me. They don't understand it. So,
well, and maybe it's like a few years ago in Chicago, one of the former Black Panther, Bobby Rush, had opposition with his own primary. He won that race. He defeated Barack Obama. Although the difference is there, I just don't see Abel Mabel Thomas or Markel Hutchins being, you know, in light years of Barack Obama as a challenger against, you know, John Lewis.
But Obama's endorsement of Lewis could really diffuse the one issue they are attacking Representative Lewis on, right?
Yeah.
And that is the issue of his, what they view as tepid support of Senator Obama.
Yes, and another thing that he could do that also would, I think, diffuse some of the support, too, is if he ends up selecting Hillary Clinton as the vice presidential candidate, then it's kind of like we've all got to come together anyway. I mean, it's just, so I think there's a lot of ways to diffuse things. I mean, and really, if that's your only reason he didn't endorse one candidate over another candidate, and that's your sole campaign, that's pretty sad. I mean, because John Lewis can do a lot more for the city of Atlanta, the 5th District, than either the other ones could right off the bat, and it would, or even longer, because he just has a sense of history that you can't recreate.
Well, plus he has seniority on some very important committees, ways and means. I mean, he's got a long history of his service in the Congress, and a lot of people who really respect him, and yeah, I mean, it's mind-boggling. But I have to tell you that it was great to hear him talking about, you know, going out and canvassing and going to the festivals, and I mean, I think he's really quite rejuvenated by this process, honestly.
Yes, and I don't know what that'll do for turnout, and I kind of bring up another state that we cover. Alabama had their elections yesterday. Last Tuesday, and their elections only had about a 14% turnout, very, very low. And then I look at Georgia, you know, because we've had these dramatic surges for this very exciting race in the presidential race, but then do things go back to usual, if you will, in Georgia, and does Georgia have a very low turnout, and what does that do for some of these contested races like the 5th Congressional, the 12th Congressional, U.S. Senate race. Catherine and Tim, any thoughts on that?
Wow. That's a very sobering thought, David. We're all geared up here looking for a huge turnout, when in fact that may not be the case. And it's not just statewide that we're talking about. Look at you're in Scott's County. I believe you have one contested race on the Democratic side in the primaries. Is that correct?
That is correct, and I think that's the way a lot of places are, other than the in-town metro areas.
So won't that drive turnout down?
It won't do anything to boost turnout. I mean, there'll be a few people that'll come out because they know those individuals, and of course you'll have people like the three of us are, we'll vote for anything. If they started electing drain commissioners in Georgia, we'd go out and vote in it. But and so that's the kind of thing. I mean, and so that's what you'll get. Now, how does that affect things? I mean, looking at U.S. Senate, and I spoke with one of our Kudzuvan colleagues the other day on the phone, Bernita, and I said, Bernita, if you don't come on, I want you to come on the show. If you don't come on the show, I'm going to give you credit, but tell what you said, because it made such a good point is, the counties that actually have really important local elections, Clayton County, I mean, my goodness, what comes out of that could, you know, totally impact their accreditation. They also have a sheriff's race and a CEO or a chairman's race that's very important. DeKalb County, the race to replace Vernon Jones will be on the ballot, as well as some of the commissioner's slots, including the one to replace Burl Ellis.
Hello, we're electing a new sheriff in Fulton County.
Fulton County, the next thing I was going to say is Myron Freeman. Is he on the ballot, or did he decline to run?
He's running.
So you may not be electing a new sheriff, but... So these three counties, and then, of course, the 5th Congressional is a contested race, the 10th. So these places that have these bigger races may have an inordinate amount of the population, and how does that affect it? Does that help Vernon Jones, because a lot of the vote will come out of DeKalb, and if they are like what he's done, or if they don't like what he's done, how will that affect things? Fulton, you know, that's in Jim Martin's base. Will that help him? Or if turnout across the board is down, it's a, you know, 14-15% turnout across the board, does that just mean the absolute citizens, a lot of older folks vote,
does that help one of the other candidates? Maybe, you know, Del Cardwell, I think. Any thoughts, Tim?
Well, what about a guy like Rand Knight who's gotten the endorsements of these labor unions and things? Now, we know that those troops hit the ground running.
Exactly.
Will they get their people out, and will he pull an upset? I think we should rule it out.
I don't think so either.
If union voters come out and produce an inordinate amount of the electorate, then that helps him, you have to think.
And you got to think with those big races in the metro area that a guy like Vernon Jones is going to get help there, right?
Well, I mean, it's just really, really interesting. I mean, the polls we either get, you know, top line figures from one of the independent agencies, or we get a poll that's paid for by the candidate that doesn't match the other polls. So we just don't know what to make. Maybe we'll do a full poll where we get the crosstabs, and we can really tell what's going on.
That happened just this week, David, when the Martin campaign released an inside poll that said they were ahead, but this poll does not match up with any of the public polling out there, so I don't know what to make of it.
And 51% of the people are undecided. I mean, maybe that's where they said, if you're absolutely committed to your candidate, and then that's the number you get. I mean, Mark Melman's a very, very knowledgeable pollster. I don't think he's just, you know, mixing up serums in his polling lab. I mean, it has to have some basis somewhere, but it may be that that's the absolute firm number that we're looking at, and then that's how you get this, you know, grossly inflated 51% undecided. But then if you look at the way I'm leaning today, and that's where then you raise up the numbers for candidates like, I believe you'd have to raise the number up for Vernon Jones, Del Cardwell, and Rand Knight, because Rand Knight was 11% in one poll I saw, and then he's, 1% in this poll? I mean, he dropped 10%. And the first poll was taken before he was endorsed by the unions. This poll was taken after he was endorsed by the unions. I don't think that cost him 10% poll in a Democratic primary.
No.
No.
So, I mean, it's we're reading the tea leaves, but I don't think we're seeing all of them or something. We need some better information.
Yeah, really.
So that, and then of course these other races, I mean, we haven't seen a poll come out on the 5th or the 10th. We're getting polls for the 2010 governor's race amongst the candidate that we've been told not going to put his name on the ballot again, and we can't get polls on the 2008 race amongst people that are even actually running. So it's strange things there. But I guess segueing into that, I guess that poll would say, with Governor Barnes leading Casey Cagle, that the Democratic brand is by no means irreparably flawed in Georgia. Catherine, any thoughts on that poll that came out?
I didn't see that poll, but I don't think that the brand is irreparably damaged.
No, but the Republicans would like for you to think that, or that's what they try to make other people think. But, I mean, it showed, Tim, you made the number, it was like Governor Barnes was in the high 40s and Cagle was in the mid to low 40s.
Yeah, it was about a 4 or 5 point difference.
Yes. And some of that, you know, oh, we know Roy Barnes. Casey Cagle, we think we know him. I mean, there's some inflation there for just people to know Roy Barnes. Yeah. But then even if it's – but that shows that in the last election we lost by more than 10 – in that race, but then this poll, if we run the right candidate with the right money, we can definitely make it a race to win or lose.
Right, and we all know that. I personally believe the importance of the right candidate, though I don't dismiss the very big importance of a lot of money. But I think we have to run a good candidate and not have a divisive primary within the party. I mean, I think that hurt us last time.
Yes.
In the governor's race.
Yes, I mean, it just, and running against an incumbent is different, even though we see how he's cut education and done nothing on roads and things like that, but it just didn't pierce the average voter for whatever reason, because his, you know, his approval rating continues to stay definitely at a reelect number even to this day, even though he's in a party that's very unpopular.
So it just was just not the right race. I mean, obviously, we would have been better off if both of the main candidates, Kathy Cox and Mark Taylor, stayed where they were, held those seats for us to give us more of a power base, and then, you know, chose a different time to fight, if you will. But that's already happened. But I guess we're coming close to the close of the show. It's been a quick one. Tim, if you'll give us the outrage of the week.
Okay, David, this past Tuesday was billed, and rightly so, I might add, as one of the biggest nights ever in presidential primary politics, because a great drama was coming to an end. History was being made. First, Senator Clinton and then Senator Obama would be addressing huge crowds at their respective venues. Oh, but there was to be a third speaker as well. The Republicans just could not resist crashing the Democratic evening. So they sent nominee John McCain to a New Orleans suburb and began to trumpet a major speech that he would make that same night. And I suppose that at least they thought it was a smart idea to attempt to upstage the Democrats on their big night, but unfortunately for the Republicans, that was about the only smart thing that John McCain's people did. Now, I'm just an old political guy talking here, okay? But I was just wondering some things. First of all, who chose that terrible, dreary little venue? For those who don't know, it's called the Pontchartrain Center. It's not known as a good place to have televised events, and it's small. So here was Senator McCain in this dreary little place addressing a crowd of about 300, if that. Now, who in the McCain campaign thought that was a good idea? Because the view of that anemic crowd was followed a few minutes later by Hillary Clinton's crowd of several thousand and by Barack Obama's overflow gathering of 22,000 inside and another 15,000 outside. Well, the crowd size was bad enough, but then they put McCain in front of this terrible lime green sign, and he wasn't wearing any makeup, and it absolutely made him look about 20 years older than his current 71 years. And then the worst mistake happened, folks. He spoke. And to put it bluntly, it was a decent speech when written, I guess, that was just absolutely ruined by the speaker. Senator McCain was just awful. He couldn't even hardly follow the teleprompter. He was halting and stumbling all over the place. And so I have another question. Why didn't the Republicans just stand down just for this one night? But no, they just couldn't stand the thought of one little day being reserved for the Democrats and the history that they made. So McCain talked all right, and he pounded Obama and the Democrats in his halting voice and said the usual stuff that they were wrong for America, blah, blah, blah. And yet, the latest economic news just this Friday underscores just how wrong John McCain and the Republicans are. Tuesday was a bad night for John McCain and the Republicans. But I want the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November to be their worst nightmare. So let me end today by quoting Hillary Clinton, who said to the voters of Pennsylvania earlier this year, "You know, I wish the Republicans would apologize for the disaster of the Bush-Cheney years and not even run anybody. Just say to go back into the White House." That sure is a nice thought, isn't it, David?
Yeah, that's dreaming, but I know what you're saying. and Tim, that wasn't the outrage of the week. That was like the pity of the week. You're just playing pity.
Oh, I don't know. If you had to set through it, it was pretty outrageous.
We should have pity for you, it sounds like. I did hear, and I don't know if they were speaking about that, I heard two Republicans at the, because my little event I attended was bipartisan, and they were just talking about how McCain is just
desperate to get people to build a crowd. It's just they've never seen anything like it, that they can't, you know, no one's excited about going out. Now, I think if you measured enthusiasm, this would be a landslide, but I don't think it's going to be a landslide because people are just going to show up at the polls and begrudgingly vote. But the thing is if you don't think the Democrats are the answer, how in the world can you believe the Republicans are?
Yeah, and if you saw the economic news this Friday, how can you believe that the Republicans have any answers?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why I think that someone like a Barr, even outside of Georgia, may actually have more support, because it's like the, you know, I mean, I kind of hasten to say this, but like the third way, even though it's really not in the middle, it's just like some of the Republicans' agenda on steroids. even less the cream and the clear, even less you know, caring about people. But I think it was a good show, and Mr. Underwood made for an interesting guest, and then Scott talks about the training and a little banter between ourselves, but we'll just see y'all next week on the Kudzu Vine.
Okay.
All right, good night, guys.
Good night.